Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. The big news, of course, just before we go to tape here, Ian, is that the death of Freddie Gray in Baltimore has been ruled a homicide. There are six officers charged with a variety of crimes, the most serious, I believe, being second-degree murder. Most of them, the highest charge will be manslaughter, as well as other lesser charges along the way. So hopefully that means calmer streets and a fair process for everyone involved going forward here. This is not one of the martinis, but we obviously wanted to mention it briefly before getting into the other news, since this will be dominating the headlines the rest of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a bevy of charges against all six officers who were involved in the arrest and the escort, with the stiffest charge of second-degree depraved heart murder, is what it's called, against the driver of the van. There are a couple interesting things here. One, very serious charges. You know, this, so what it looks like is a very aggressive prosecution. The charges relate to a whole the whole sequence of events from the initial arrest to Mr. Gray's death. So it looks like the state attorney is going after just a whole swath of elements in this case. What that means is that we're likely to hopefully going to get a very thorough investigation, look at the facts. Of course, this is somewhat dangerous, as we saw in Ferguson and again in Staten Island. When charges are initially made or things are brought up to a grand jury, there's an expectation from a lot of people, especially those people on the streets. It's not going to be sufficient that charges were filed in the process was allowed to work, but they're looking for a result. And so it's going to require a lot of patience and self-restraint on the part of everyone in this case to make sure that the facts are the central focus.
So that is the big headline today. We'll briefly get into the three martinis now. And the good martini from the conservative perspective is that Bernie Sanders is in double figures in Iowa. Now, he's still getting trounced at this point by Hillary Clinton, but give him a break. He's only been in the race for about 24 hours here. Public policy polling survey shows that Hillary Clinton's at 62%. Sanders, though, at 14%. Now, he's the only other Democrat officially in the race. We'll see what happens if O'Malley gets in, although the past week and a half in Baltimore cannot be good for his insurgent campaign against Hillary Clinton. It's hard to see how Jim Webb or Lincoln Chafee could ever make a dent. So I guess the good news for the hardcore liberal base of the Democratic Party is that Bernie Sanders is a true believer who has kind of been promoting this far-left ideology for a long time, and whether or not it's good for the country, which we clearly don't think it is, he's going to present perhaps a small problem for Mrs. Clinton, who a lot of people, even on the left, do not trust as actually one of them.
That's right. So there are sort of two things that Sanders brings to the race, and I'll steal here from my colleague Charlie Cook, who wrote this up for our website a couple days ago. One thing is that Sanders is genuine. At least he seems to come across that way. You know, he says here, I'm a socialist. This is what I believe. He doesn't try to hide the banner under which he works. That's in direct contrast to Hillary Clinton, who is just so relentlessly poll tested and focus grouped. Every Twitter message seems to have been run through 20 different people. So there's that contrast to be made. The second thing, though, is that it points out ideological differences. PPP is a left-leaning polling agency. But what they found is, of course, unsurprisingly, those who consider themselves very liberal favor Sanders significantly. So the interesting thing here is that we always seem to hear about a Republican civil war. The Republicans always seem to be about to fatally fracture. It's far more true of Democrats who are really fragmented between the old school Bill Clinton-esque liberal progressivism and this hard Elizabeth Warren Occupy style leftism. And so a lot of those folks might hold their nose and vote for Hillary, not just for the nomination, but for the presidency. But if she were to win, her general campaign, her presidency, God forbid, would be, I think, very fractious. We've seen the hard left even sour on Obama who in a lot of ways is very much of their mindset. So I think they would be particularly merciless toward Hillary, and that'll present some opportunities, I think, for Republicans going forward.
On to the bad martini now, and whenever there's trouble racially or in terms of police conduct, you can better believe that Al Sharpton is not far away, and now he is in Baltimore and is leading a march, at least one march, I think, this week, and maybe even more than that. This comment from him is obviously from before the charges were announced in Baltimore earlier today, but I don't think it necessarily changes his position. Al Sharpton here, courtesy of the Baltimore Sun, believes that it's time for the feds to take over policing. Listen to this.
We need the Justice Department to step in and take over policing in this country. In the 20th century, they had to fight states' rights and to get the right to vote. We got to fight states' rights in terms of closing down police cases. Police must be held accountable. I don't think all police are bad. I don't even think most are bad. But those that are need to be held accountable.
The Justice Department needs to take over policing. For the most part, Ian, you could probably normally chalk this up to the comments somebody like Michael Moore made in the last couple of days saying disarm police right. And let every nonviolent black offender out of prison. But Al Sharpton has been defined as the White House point man on race, so his comments carry more weight than they probably used to and certainly should.
It's sort of an interestingly timed comment because in Obama's impromptu remarks the other day during his press conference with the Japanese prime minister when he addressed Baltimore briefly, he sort of said with that Obama lament in his voice, I can't just nationalize, I can't just federalize the police force. And it sort of had that wistfulness that he talked about, that he had when he talked about China's one party government. So I think that in both situations, you have sort of progressives' knee-jerk faith in centralized or national government. They think that for some reason, when you get to that highest level, it's just so much better. And the fact is, it's just the opposite. The federal government, a large centralized government, is far more politicized state or local governments. It's also just a bad idea on the merits. One of the important things about police, ideally, is that they're members of the community that they police. The difference that conservatives go on about, which is an important one, is we want a local police force, not, say, a standing army brought in from outside, because those people have no relationship to the community. They have no reason to temper themselves or to sort of reach out and try to forge bonds with the communities that they're policing. Local officers do. And so when the police are members of the community and when they're responsible to the community, that's a way of tempering them and a way of holding them accountable. If you sort of federalize the police or law enforcement across the nation and suddenly make them responsible to the diktats coming out of Washington, D.C., suddenly they're much less responsible in a way to their communities, and they're more responsible to this federal juggernaut that whose policies are going to change every 4 years. That'll create more problems than it'll solve, certainly.
Big Baltimore edition of the Three Martini Lunch as we close out the week. And the crazy one is in that vein as well. This is from CNN's Money website. Whole Foods is finding itself in the middle of a social media storm after one of its Baltimore stores posted a photo showing National Guard troops in the city getting sandwiches and water there. On Tuesday, Whole Foods Harbor East Market posted a picture of troops holding a container of food with cases of bottled water at their feet on the store's Facebook page. The posting said that the store had teamed up with another Whole Foods nearby, quote, to make sandwiches for the men and women keeping Baltimore safe. We are so thankful to have them here, and they're pumped for turkey and cheese, unquote. But after clashes between authorities and residents protesting the death of a man in Baltimore police custody, many people objected to the support for the troops. Some said the troops didn't need food beyond what's provided by the guard and voiced concern for children in Baltimore who are missing out on free lunches since the schools have been closed that day. One tweet, Whole Foods feeding the National Guard in a city where most kids can't eat if schools are closed is the perfect American metaphor, perfect in all caps. Others called for a boycott of Whole Foods. Whole Foods spokesman Mike Silverman said the grocery chain is giving thousands of meals to rec centers in Baltimore so the children who are missing out on school lunches can eat. We're deeply involved in community in many different levels, and we've done that for a long time. But the photo was still taken down because, quote, it created an impression that wasn't a true depiction of all the assistance we provide in Baltimore. So, Ian, no good deed goes unpunished, I guess.
Exactly. Goodness, it's disheartening. I mean, this is Whole Foods. I mean, this is the paragon of leftist right. nutrition here. And suddenly they're turning on them. Look, what Whole Foods did was a good thing, and they should be proud of it. What this highlights, I think, is the inclination of progressivism often to be just sort of downright mean. One of the tweets that came out from a reporter of some note was described Whole Foods as catering to the oppressor, you know, the National Guard as the oppressor trying to protect Baltimore citizens from having their stores pillaged and torched and all the rest. I've been listening to the Republican presidential candidate speak at the National Review Summit that's going on right now. They're talking in terms of coalition building and, you know, America and sort of trying to reach out to groups that have felt disenfranchised and the rest. It's such a striking contrast to what you hear from the left constantly, which is you have to take a side. You had to take a side in Indiana. You have to take a side in same-sex marriage. It's an either or. It's black and white. If you're not with us, you're against us. If you're against us, then we'll try to crush you. It's just really sort of a despicable impulse, this meanness that emanates from the left. And I think that the right does itself a lot of favors, or can do itself a lot of favors, by turning away from that sort of nasty, divisive tone towards something much more hopeful and that fosters a community.
Yeah, zero tolerance whatsoever for disagreement. It is sometimes fascinating to watch them eat one of their own, but still, it's frightening when you see that they actually will go after their own for something as simple as this. So, Ian, great to have you with us on a bizarre end to the week, but great to have you a couple times this week. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks so much, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Monday. Please join us then for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.